gun controls, congressional gridlock, federal finances, and presidential politics are just a few of the election issues we'll discuss tonight. I'm Charles Compton, and this is New York 22, a League of Women Voters debate between Republican candidates in New York's 22nd congressional district. We're before a live audience in our Vestal studios. Thanks to them and to you for joining us on radio and TV. Good evening. Also with us are GOP candidates George Phillips and Stephen Wells. Fellow Republican Claudia Tenney was invited to participate but is unable to attend, prompting the statement from the League of Women Voters. New York State Assembly member Claudia Tenney, Republican candidate for the New York 22nd Congressional District, has informed us she is unable to participate in this debate due to extended end of session assembly voting in Albany. We regret that Mrs. Tenney is not here. Federal Election Commission and Federal Communications Commission regulations require for a federal level debate, two candidates must appear. Mr. Phillips and Mr. Wells are confirmed and are here. Therefore, the criteria have been met and we will proceed with the debate. The League of Women Voters also requires that conducting debates, two candidates must appear. The League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan volunteer organization working to promote informed and responsible participation of citizens in government. Toward that end, they present debates and candidate forums as a service to the public. They neither support or oppose any political party or candidate. That's the end of the statement. I might add, we are following their rules tonight. The primary election on June 28th will decide which of these candidates will represent the GOP in November's general election. This month's Democratic primary is uncontested, so there's no need for a debate there. The winner in November's general election will replace Congressman Richard Hanna, who's retiring. Here are the ground rules. Each candidate has 2 minutes for opening statements, a flip of the coin decided who goes first. We're still taking questions from the general public, and candidates will take turns answering your questions. As moderator, I reserve the privilege of asking a follow-up question if I feel the answer is unclear. No candidate has seen these questions. They have 2 minutes to answer each question. Closing statements are also 1 minute each. If the candidate exceeds the time limit, we have a league volunteer staffing a big bulb horn. Carl, give us a sample of that horn. So you'll hear that horn when you've gone over, and he'll just keep on it. So, just so you know. Since we are monitoring Twitter, we can see your questions and your comments. Just use the hashtag NY22. That's hashtag NY22 if you want to send comments or questions into WSKG so we can pass them along to the candidates. You can also make remarks and ask questions on our Facebook page, on the WSKG Facebook page. We've asked our audience to reserve their applause until the program's end. Finally, WSKG and the League of Women Voters are very committed to promoting civil discourse. So I want to remind the candidates of the saying that was often used by President Ronald Reagan, "Thou shalt not speak ill of any fellow Republican." Now for the opening statements. Mr. Phillips, you're up first.
Thank you. I want to thank the League of Women Voters and WSKG for hosting this debate. I want to thank my family and some of my high school students for joining us this evening. We start this evening by remembering the victims of the tragedy in Orlando, the greatest terrorist attack on the United States since September 11th. We carry on with this race with them in mind and in our thoughts and in our prayers. I grew up in this area during a time of prosperity. During the 1990s when the downturn hit, I was working at the old IBM plant during my summers in college. My brother lost his job at the GE plant and moved to North Carolina. Every single one of us in this community here have family and friends we wish could be here, but can't because of the economic situation. I've been proud to serve as Dean of Students at Seton Catholic Central High School and as an adjunct at Broome Community College, and to be raising my family here in this area that I love. In 2010, I ran for Congress in the hopes of making things better. I'm greatly thankful for all the support we had for so many in the community. If you recall, we faced overwhelming odds. We were at the end, the number two race in the country. President Bill Clinton even campaigned against me. Over the last few years, in addition to my teaching duties, I've been working for the Jack Kemp Foundation. Jack Kemp, the Buffalo Bill football star who spearheaded the Reagan economic revival, mentored me before his death. I've worked on economic policy issues, and I'm running for Congress to try to make things better for our community and for our country. I'm running on an upstate jobs plan. tax and regulatory relief on the federal level that the state has to match, to create jobs and get our economy going here. We have a lot of momentum in recent days. I was endorsed by the American Conservative Union, the oldest and most respected conservative organization in the country, and I was endorsed by Steve Forbes as well, the great economist and political figure. I'm looking forward to the debate tonight, and I'm hoping to win your endorsement and your support as well.
Mr. Wells, your turn.
Thank you very much, and I'd like to thank the League of Women Voters for hosting us here this evening. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm here with my wife, Pamela. Our two boys, 11 and 12-year-old boys, Jack and Sam, are home, hopefully studying. That's what they should be doing, and we'll find out when we get home a little bit later tonight. So I've never run for public office before. I grew up here in upstate, and I went to Cornell University. And when I got out, I've essentially held two jobs. I was a prosecutor, and in that role, I've tried the most heinous, horrible crimes, rape, robbery, murder, gun violence, the worst things that, the worst side of humanity. And after that, my brother and I started a business. And for over 20 years, we've had an office right here on Corporate Drive in Binghamton. Our business is American Food and Vending. We provide food services to many local schools like Broome Community College. And in fact, we do business all over the 8-county region. We started with nothing, and now we have over 1,500 employees. And we're happy because that's very difficult to create jobs and create prosperity here in upstate New York, and all of us know that. And so many of our customers here in the Southern Tier and Broome County have suffered, and we've suffered right along with them. I want to tell you the reason that I'm running. It's about economic security, and it's about our national security. Those are the two big issues of the day. Those are the reasons that I'm running for Congress, and I look forward to a debate and talking about those issues in particular. So thanks for having me.
Let's go ahead and start questioning. Of course, the headlines and our concerns, our attention has been focused on Orlando this last week. We had a celebrity shooting on Friday night and then a mass killing early Sunday morning last weekend as well. So, of course, I want to discuss gun control. It's certainly on the national agenda right now. Mr. Phillips, what kind of gun controls, if any, would you support? What's your position on the public's ability to purchase, possess, and use military-style weapons?
I'm an American history teacher who teaches the Constitution. I believe fully in the Second Amendment right to bear arms. And I have an A rating from the National Rifle Association. I am sad whenever a tragedy like this occurs that the first reaction is always to try to infringe upon constitutional rights. We've had terrorists fly planes into buildings, killing thousands of people. We've had terrorists set off bombs at the Boston Marathon, killing people. We've had school shootings, but as an American history teacher, I know the worst school tragedy in history was actually in the 1920s when a disgruntled man lost a local election and blew up a school building, killing children. We have to focus in this debate on the power of evil in the world and evil acts. We have to focus on countering that. No so-called gun control legislation would have prevented these heinous acts where guns were actually involved. People who are willing to come in and murder 50 innocent people in a nightclub or with the intention of killing hundreds are certainly going to get a gun illegally or any type of weapon they can to murder and maim innocent human beings. And so we have to focus on the threat. I'm sad in these days that many of our public leaders haven't focused more on ISIS. This man who committed the tragedy would not have died for a failed ideology had ISIS been defeated a long time ago like they should have. Where is our resolve? Why, after the Paris attacks, was France asking us what targets to hit? Why were we not hitting those targets ourselves? I'm calling for a nothing-in, nothing-out embargo of ISIS territory to strangle the beast, to defeat them once and for all, allow humanitarian supplies in, but why is ISIS trading oil on the black market? Why are they trading looted goods? We need to stop and defeat ISIS once and for all. We need to recognize the power of evil in this world, and we have to respect our constitutional rights.
I'm going to follow up immediately on that. So one time my daughter was hitting my other daughter with a cooking pot. Mm-hmm. I took the cooking pot away from her. Mm-hmm. And then I went after the evil that was behind the act. Why not take away the tool and mm-hmm. then deal with the evil?
Because the criminals, those who are seeking to perpetrate evil, are going to get these weapons and perpetrate evil no matter how they can. someone is not going to say, oh, I'm wanting to commit a massacre and kill hundreds of people. I was turned down by some background check, so, oh, shucks, I'm not going to get a gun. Now, they're going to get a gun illegally or some other type of weapon or a bomb, and they're going to do this. We have to focus on the power of evil here and the fact that evil people are going to commit these acts. The focus in this particular case is certainly ISIS here. In many of the school shootings, the focus is mental health situations, that the individual should have got mental health counseling, and had they done that, perhaps these tragedies could have been prevented. But those who are this determined to commit evil are going to get guns or other means of destruction to kill innocent human beings.
Okay, I want to go back in a little bit and talk about how we deal with the evil, but I want to give Mr. Wells a chance to answer my original question.
Sure, of course. I can tell you from my experience as a prosecutor firsthand, having tried case after case of violent homicides, including homicides that are committed and perpetrated by people using guns, and also homicides that are committed by people perpetrating them using other manners and means. It's the intent to kill that is at hand. That is the issue. Now, I've been a shooter, and I first got my first Remington when I was 11 years old. There's nobody in this audience, and nobody here in Broome County, and nobody here in Tioga County has to worry about me handling a firearm or be posing a danger to them. The problem is not law-abiding citizens. I can tell you firsthand, having prosecuted these cases, and if it's not a gun, the people will find another manner and means. When they have the intent to kill, they use that intent and they execute upon it. The problem is not the weapon. The gun, and I want to tell you, in our district, in this district, is Remington Arms, the oldest gun company in America. In fact, the oldest company that for 200 years has been making the same product. Remington is making the same product now that they were from the founding, essentially from the founding of our country. The problem is not the gun. I tell you, the problem is the people who have bad intent and use a weapon like a gun, and I've seen homicides with cars, with hatchets, I've prosecuted them with poison. There's no end to the ways someone can kill someone when they have the intent.
So I'm going to go ahead and ask the same question I asked Mr. Phillips, but in a different way. There's legislation pending in Congress that would keep assault weapons out of the hands of people on terrorist lists, no-fly lists, that sort of thing, and that remains hung up in Congress. Would you support that legislation? People that are definitely suspected of potentially being violent.
Well, look, first of all, I'm not going to comment on any particular legislation that I haven't read. That's that same.
Why not? Why haven't you read it?
I'll answer your question.
Okay.
well, I'm not in the Congress for one thing. Not in the Congress. Part of the problem with members of Congress, it seems like they're not reading what's in front of them. But to answer your question more broadly, again, the issue is not the weapon. The issue is the intent. And we have to identify and find people who want to pose danger to our country. There's no question about it. But if you've got a way to tell me how we can figure out every bad person who's here, who's got it. I mean, there's homicides. This was a mass tragedy in Orlando. But I can tell you as a prosecutor, there's file folders, manila file folders right now in every county of America, and some of them in large ones by the hundreds of homicides. Okay, this is an issue that is—it's all over America. Your issue of trying to somehow take guns away from law-abiding citizens is not going to solve this problem.
But I think you just said too that it's really hard to root out the evil and to address the evil because you don't know who's going to do what. How do you address the evil? I'll go to you first, Mr. Wells, and then you, Mr. Phillips.
Yeah, sure. Well, look, some of these are very deep-seated societal problems, and certainly if you see where homicide rates take place, oftentimes they're in the worst and most economically depressed areas of our country, in our state. So you've got some deep-seated societal issues. But when it has to do with, in this particular case, we're talking about someone who was radicalized, and that's a whole another subject matter of how we're going to deal with people, Americans who are traveling overseas and getting radicalized and want to come back and do dangerous, and this goes on, that they're traveling overseas. Now, in this case, I don't know that this person traveled, but he certainly was engaged. I believe he actually did go to Saudi Arabia, and he's certainly engaged on the internet becoming radicalized. And this is an issue, no question, that we're going to have to address.
Okay. Mr. Phillips.
A couple points here. I have looked at that legislation, and I believe on the no-fly list and the suspected terror watch list, there may be up to 1.4 million people. This is big government bureaucracy at its worst. We are not going to take rights away from law-abiding citizens because of big government failures. We did need to sharpen our intelligence. We did need to catch that killer before he committed these acts. The FBI was certainly on to him. We need to look at the world scene in ISIS, as I mentioned, defeating them, but in terms of radical Islam, we need to engage the world in moderate Islam throughout the world as it is. We need to have a Cold War style strategy. Think about the Cold War. We promoted democracy, we promoted human rights, we held up countries that were on the edge of the Iron Curtain that were there as a shining light of freedom and democracy. Islam is divided right now very much. Radical Islam and the jihadists are a small number, but we need to try to engage the more moderate Muslims and have them stand up, those here in the community that are standing up for a religion of peace, not of violence.
Let's talk about your domestic terrorists for a little bit. How do you root out the evil, though? How do you prevent, if somebody wants to do evil, how do you stop him or her? Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Phillips.
Mm-hmm. As I mentioned, promoting moderate Islam is very
big. Well, I'm talking domestic, I'm sorry.
Domestic.
So like the Sandy Hook shooting.
Domestic, okay. Mental health, I think, is very key. Mm-hmm. And I know we've had the mass shootings that really get our attention, but we have so many people who are killed from gun violence from criminals. And I had some firsthand experience, unfortunately, with this past summer. I was at the McCormick Secure Center near Ithaca. It's a maximum security youth detention facility for young men. Some of them had committed murder and rape, and many of them were certainly gun-related crimes. Some were serving life sentences. And I would come back to the point of evil, of the culture. The economy certainly has a role here, but there's some things the government can't do. The government's tried to do too much. If you look at the anti-poverty programs, we're on the 50th anniversary of the war on poverty, Lyndon Johnson's war on poverty, and it's been a disaster. We have as many people living in poverty now, trapped in big government programs, and I think this has led to crime and violence. All these issues are linked and interrelated.
Mr. Wells, do you have anything to add to that?
Sure. Look, in a free society, you cannot possibly have enough police officers on the streets to prevent bad people that intend to kill somebody in acts of domestic terrorism that you're referring to. What I think we need to do is take a little lesson from the Israelis who have studied in depth suicide bombers, because they've dealt with this on a daily basis. And they've studied and they believe that there's 8 steps along the way before someone makes the decision to do that. And so similarly, we need to understand why people are making such horrible decisions that are willing to take so many lives. Why are they doing that, and where can we intervene along those different steps so that we might actually prevent, to what you're referring to, domestic terrorism? That's what we need to do.
So there are limits on government and government's ability to protect us. Mr. Phillips.
I'm an American history teacher. The prime function of the federal government is national defense and security, immigration law, which we're doing a terrible job at. There are limits when evil is out there. If we talk about religion and faith, and those who have faith, the Judeo-Christian faith system says God created us free. With that freedom, Americans and people all around the world have done amazing things with freedom. People have done horrible things as well. And so we continue to promote what's good. We have this amazing experiment in democracy that's been going on for over 200 years now that started in America. And we have so many great things to offer the world, but the power of evil is there, and people are still going to commit evil acts.
Mr. Wells, any final point?
Yeah, to answer your question, the reason that I'm running for Congress is because of the national security, the way it's been handled. We're terribly off course. And the fact of the matter is, if we don't get ourselves back on course, we're going to have more incidences, far more problems. We are perceived as weak around the world, and in fact, we are weak around the world in the sense of our own military has been eroded, particularly over the last 8 years. And if anyone wants to take a lesson, and I'm sure George will agree with me on this, all you got to do is look anywhere around the world, and you'll see place after place. We can talk about Europe, we don't even need to talk about the Middle East, we can talk about the South China Sea, we can talk about North Korea. This is a far more dangerous world. That's the reason we have a federal government, to protect us. So we've got to do a far better job than we're doing.
Welcome to New York 22. It's a debate co-sponsored by WSKG Public Media and the League of Women Voters of Broome and Tioga Counties. I'm Charles Compton. Thanks for joining us on radio and TV. If you're looking for more information on the Republican and Democratic primaries, we urge you to visit a special website created by the League, vote411.org. That's vote411.org. With us this evening are GOP candidates George Phillips and Steve Wells. Fellow Republican Claudia Tenney was invited to participate, but Ms. Tenney is in Albany and is unable to attend. To ask a question, you can tweet us at hashtag NY22, that's NY22, or visit WSKG's Facebook page. During this next segment, I'd like to at least start off by talking about Donald Trump. I'm going to go to you first, Mr. Wells. Do you endorse Mr. Trump for president?
Well, my answer to you is the same as it's been since I've been asked this question, 3 months ago, I guess. And my view is whether he was your first choice or your 17th choice, he is a far better alternative to Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders. In my view, again, the reason that I'm running is because of economic security and national security, and I don't need to lecture people here in Broome and Tioga counties in the southern tier about our job situation and the job erosion that we've had here in New York State for over 30 years. And, you know, socialism is the surest path to destruction. And if anybody wants to challenge that, all they got to do is look south to Venezuela, where in 17 years, a country has been utterly destroyed. They have more oil wealth down there than Saudi Arabia, and yet in 17 years under Chavez and his successor now, you can't go out and get a package of toilet paper or a package of light bulbs. They've destroyed that country. This country was founded on the free market and free enterprise system, and that is what we've got to go back to. The essential problem with our job erosion here is because we've had too much government intervention. It's not because we haven't had enough. We've had too much government overregulation and too much taxation that has made us, and I can tell you this firsthand as a businessman, this has made our state and now our country uncompetitive. This is why jobs are leaving, and they will continue to leave until we become competitive.
Now, if I went up to my wife and said, well, you're better than the alternative, I would be single right now. That was not an endorsement of Mr. Trump. You're essentially saying, yeah, he's the best available. Is that good enough? Is there anything about Mr. Trump that really excites you?
Well, look, the one thing I tell you from what I find from being on the campaign trail and talking to a lot of folks is look, people are sick and tired of politicians that have promised so much for so long and don't get anything done. And what I hear folks say about Donald Trump often is that I don't really agree with everything he says. I don't even necessarily agree with the way he says it. But the fact of the matter is he's a business person who's been successful, and I understand that. And at least he's not a politician. I believe he could be a voice of change in Washington. That's what I hear over and over again by the folks that I find on the campaign trail. And certainly, I agree with them in the sense of we need change in Washington. There's just no question about that.
Mr. Phillips, do you endorse Mr. Trump?
3 points on Mr. Trump. First, what has made this possible? An absolute disaster in Washington. People have had enough with the mess in Washington, and that's led to the rise of Donald Trump and other outsiders. Point number two, while I don't support some of the comments that he's made that have been very, very offensive, what would be even more harmful for the nation is to continue on the policies that we've had the last 8 years with President Obama. They have been a disaster. We are at a 62% workforce participation rate. That is one of the lowest levels since the 1970s. Americans are working harder for less. We have problems all around the world because we've pulled back so much due to the policies of this administration, not recognizing the power of evil in the world. We are freedom's indispensable nation. When the U.S. pulls back as it has these last years, the world becomes less free. I would look at the fact that I'm an American history teacher who teaches the Constitution, and the Founding Fathers said the most powerful branch of government was not the president, but the Congress. We need to get back to that. The president can only sign or veto what the Congress sends him or her. I plan to be a leader in this new Congress if I'm elected to serve the people of this district. We need to lead on tax and regulatory reform. That's part of my upstate jobs plan. We have the effective highest corporate tax rate in the world that's killing jobs here in our community, sending jobs out of our community, sending jobs out of our country. We need lower rates across the board, and Mr. Trump has certainly talked about that. We need less regulations. There's 178,000 pages of regulations in the U.S. Code that are costing the economy $1.9 trillion a year. We need to secure the border. Mr. Trump has talked about this, not just from illegal immigrants, but also heroin. I have a plan to defeat heroin at its source. Let's destroy the crop in Mexico before it gets in our streets here and kills more young people in our community.
And to follow up, so is there anything about Mr. Trump that really excites you?
His policies in general are a direction we need to go. Less taxes, less regulation, repeal Obamacare. We're not, as a party, articulating what we should do with health care. Health care was broken before Obamacare. Obamacare has made things worse. Less choices for Americans now, higher costs because of Obamacare. I want a dynamic market of choice. I want more choices for all Americans. So overall, Mr. Trump's platform on the issues, on policies, I believe are the direction we need to go, but we need Congress to step up and lead, and I want to be a leader on some of these policies from day one in the Congress. And I think he's been more broad stroke on issues. We need to talk more about nuts and bolts. That's what I've got into in my platform here in terms of specifics, where we should take the country. I believe each individual member of Congress should step up on these important issues that are critical for our community here. We're all affected by job losses. We're all, I think, know someone who died from a heroin overdose. We're all know someone who's dealing with a difficult medical situation right now.
So if am I hearing you correctly, you're hoping that Mr. Trump will be a weak president and Congress would essentially be the most powerful branch of government, as you say it was designed to be. And that's how you would manage Mr. Trump, is by kind of keeping him in a box?
Well, I'd say, one, let's realize the reality. The president is focused so much in the modern era because they're on TV all the time. They do talk about an agenda, but at the end of the day, they can only sign or veto what the Congress sends them. And I think this new Congress has an opportunity to lead on a very strong agenda. I want to be part of it. I want to be part of a bold plan for America to get this country going again. Ronald Reagan-style tax cuts and reforms to lift up this economy like we did in the 80s and win the Cold War and spread this economic growth and prosperity to the whole world. And if we do that, the world will be more stable and it will be more safe. So again, if you look at the Constitution, the power is in the Congress, but if you also look to the reality of what's going on right now, you can only sign or veto. The president can only sign or veto what the Congress gives them. This president, Obama, has engaged on an assault on the Constitution. Illegal executive orders on immigrants, trying to give amnesty for illegal immigrants without the Congress. Illegal executive orders on health care. We need to stand up. We need to fight for the Constitution of the United States, and that's what I'll do in the Congress.
Mr. Wells, as a Congress member, you would have to manage Mr. Trump. How would you manage him? How would you accomplish such initiatives?
Well, look, the presidency and the executive branch is out of control. And what we've seen is a flood of overregulation, particularly in the last 8 years, that is killing jobs. You wonder why jobs have fled the southern tier here? I'll tell you why. And I can tell you this as a business person who serves all these businesses here, right here in our area. The reason that we're losing is because we're not competitive. And so what we need is less federal government, less overregulation. We only need regulation where we truly provides the safety that is absolutely necessary. And we need to start with our national defense. What we don't need I'm running out of time, but I'll give you example after example that I found traveling around this district where government overregulation is killing us. And we need to take that authority back from the presidency and cut those regulations. And I've got a plan to do it.
Let's go ahead and shift over to the economy. First, I want to talk about fracking with Mr. Phillips. What's your opinion on fracking, and do you agree with Governor Cuomo's decision here in New York State to ban it?
Well, like a lot of people in the area, I entered into this debate with very much an open mind. I remember going to my first hearing on the topic at Owego Apalachin Middle School back in 2008. I studied the issue very carefully. And I actually toured natural gas drilling rigs in Pennsylvania. I saw the safeguards that were in place and the tremendous prosperity that it brought to poor communities down there. Towanda, Pennsylvania, if you drive through, I feel that it looks more like Cooperstown than a poor community that it once was. We had a $15 billion economic study over 10 years for natural gas. We have booms in Pennsylvania, Ohio, North Dakota, and other states that have allowed safe natural gas drilling, And I think it really was tragic for our community here about what Governor Cuomo did, not respecting the rights of landowners, not respecting the rights of law-abiding citizens who wanted to use their land for prosperity. The natural gas revolution and the energy revolution is propelling this country to new heights. Our economic situation as a nation would be much worse if we didn't have the energy revolution we've had in the last few years here in this country. We need to open up our exports. We could bury adversaries in the Middle East and Russia and Venezuela with more exports of natural gas and petroleum. It was a huge lost opportunity for this community. We have workers on natural gas rigs making $100,000 a year, electricians and others. What a lost opportunity here. And I will continue to speak up for safe natural gas drilling. We won't do it in New York State unless it's safe. I do think the state made a very, very, very poor decision. I was proud to work with the landowners in the middle of this debate, to respect them. I thank them for all the good they did for the community, and I hope we can have an opportunity for safe natural gas drilling here in the Southern Tier.
Mr. Wells, your opinion on fracking?
Well, again, the reason that I'm running for Congress is because of our economic and national security headed in the wrong direction. And this issue of energy independence touches on both of those issues. There's no question about it. We have the opportunity to be energy independent, and think of how better off the country would be if we were there. Think of all the involvement we've had in the Middle East and around the world, and the lives lost of Americans. It would not have been necessary if we were energy independent. And so I will tell you that even the EPA, and I'll give you example after example of overregulation by the EPA that is killing our farmers here in upstate New York and right here in Broome County and in Chenango County, so just to the north of us. But even the EPA provides that fracking is acceptable. And as you know, it's occurring in state after state around the country other than in New York. And so look, I live on a well. I get well water. My children drink our water. Nobody wants unsafe drinking water or pollution that's going to kill us. That's not what we want. But we need safe energy independence. And the state and the Southern Tier is suffering, and there's no reason for it.
This audience member wants to know if we should end subsidies to companies for fossil fuel development. Mr. Wells, I'll stay with you.
Look, overall, I, as a business person, what I want is the lowest taxation rate across the board that would make us competitive with other countries, and regulations that gets the federal government out of our way. That's the plan. That's what we need to do to have safe, to increase prosperity here in the Southern Tier. That's what we need.
But what about these subsidies to fossil fuel development? Do you want to
continue
federal subsidies? Should Congress be spending money?
I don't think that to answer your question, I don't think that the Congress should be picking, or the President should be picking winners and losers. I mean, this is a free market economy. It's supposed to be part of is a free market, free enterprise system. I don't believe in the government picking winners and losers of companies or industries. I don't think that that's the way to go. We need to get back more. Again, you know, my thing about cutting regulations, need to get back more to the free market system. That's what we need. That's what has created the engine of wealth that has created more prosperity here in the United States than any country in the world.
I'm going to ask you now, Mr. Phillips, should we end these federal subsidies to companies that develop fossil fuels?
I'm reminded of one of my favorite stories and sayings from President Reagan. He said the way that big government operates is if something's moving, if a business is moving, you tax it. If it's moving too much, you regulate it. If it stops moving, you subsidize it. We need to get away from crony capitalism and subsidies for big businesses. We need to get back to the free market. My favorite quote from my mentor, Jeb Kemp, was, "There's no limit to what free men, free women, and free markets can accomplish." We need to get back to freedom. We need to get back away from boondoggles like what President Obama did with Solyndra, giving crony businessmen and his friends hundreds of millions of taxpayer dollars for solar projects that were fraudulent and did not pan out. We need to get back to the free market. I certainly support alternatives here, but I don't want to keep passing the buck to the American taxpayer so the cronies of big government can benefit from this.
What about climate change? Is that a serious problem? I'm sorry, I'll stay with you again, Mr. Phillips. I need to be more directive.
I'm an American history teacher, and I tell my students, and I'll tell the viewers right now, it's very interesting if you look at the American Revolution. The British Army walked from Manhattan Island to Staten Island over a frozen harbor because that was a very cold period in history. That doesn't happen today. All of a sudden, things got warmer as we got into the 1800s. Why? It wasn't because of CO2 emissions. Look at the Great Depression and the Dust Bowl in Oklahoma in the 1930s. Why were the 1930s such a hot decade? We didn't have tremendous CO2 emissions like we have now. If you get into the 1970s and the creation of the EPA, we did put a lot of environmental safeguards that greatly reduced harmful pollutants to our atmosphere, but I do believe environmentalists have gone too far now. Does global warming occur? Is it mandated? I believe the debate is out. We have UN scientists who have manipulated data on this very fact here. So I do not support all these government regulations to put pressure on the United States, which already has the best environmental safeguards in the world here. And in our state, we have even better environmental safeguards. The countries that are causing tremendous harm include China, India. Many of these countries that pollute and will do anything they want with the environment sign on these international protocols, but then don't abide by them. So I'm very skeptical. I'm skeptical because of the UN manipulation of data here. And I know the stories in history, and I know some other things about science. We've had volcanoes explode in the Pacific Ocean that have put as much CO2s in the atmosphere as man-made CO2s. So don't take science as a fact. Don't believe something just because the liberal media says it to you or a college professor. In my class, I try to present both sides of the debate, and I think the debate is open right now here. We need to embrace America's energy revolution right now. Natural gas does give us a cleaner source to do that. It has less CO2 emissions than petroleum. So natural gas is a great way to go.
So science has not proven to you that climate change exists, so you don't see any need to do anything about it.
Well, let's continue to have the debate, but I don't want to put trillions of dollars of new regulation on American businesses that will cost jobs at a critical time here. We already have too many regulations, as I've mentioned, in the U.S. Code, 178,000 of them that are costing the economy $2 trillion a year already. I do not support these programs that the president is putting up. He's putting poor workers in the coal industry out of work because of regulations, and many of these he's doing by executive order without the Congress. This is against the Constitution of the United States. It needs to stop. We need to rein the executive branch in, and we need to stand up for the rights of everyday Americans and businesses from a government overreach.
Mr. Wells, does climate change exist, and is it caused by humans?
Well, look, as I mentioned earlier, I live on a well, and of course I'm concerned about the environment, I'm concerned about the air we breathe, and I'm concerned about the water that we drink. But again, the reason that I'm running for Congress is because of our economic security and our national security. And the issue is that the United States cannot operate in a vacuum. We are a global economy now, and we're competing against companies from all over the world that have an atrocious record on environmental pollution. The problem is, right now, for example, I will give you this example right here in our area, in this district, and actually in this county. The EPA has come in. For example, on a local farm, Judy Whitaker's farm, they took a 100-year-old farm and they made her move for $650,000 a silo that she had been permitted, and there was nothing wrong with the silo. They made her move her silo. Why? Because they had the authority to do it. Not because it was leaching water, not because it was doing any harm to the environment, but they did this. There is incredible amount of governmental overregulation. It is killing our upstate farms, it is killing our companies and making us uncompetitive. And if you want jobs here in the Southern Tier, then we need to unwind the overregulation that's coming out of the federal government.
Okay, so just so I'm clear, do you believe in climate change? I'm just not exactly sure.
Well, look, I agree with what George said. I mean, you can look at the history. I'm not a scientist, but the issue is where are we in our global competitive environment? I mean, are we going to have jobs, and we're going to be or are we not going to have jobs for our folks here in the Southern Tier? I think that's the issue. I support nuclear power, no carbon. I think I'm an advocate of nuclear power. I don't believe the government ought to be picking winners and losers in a free market economy. We have to compete globally, and the more we can have the free market do its magic, the more this country and the Southern Tier is going to prosper as the way we had and that built this great country. That's what we need.
You're listening and watching NY22 on WSKG Television and WSQX Radio. It's a co-production of WSKG Public Media and the League of Women Voters of Broome and Tioga Counties. On primary election night, if you want to follow local returns, WSKG has created a special website. WSKGvotes.org will have results from races in the New York counties that we serve. I'm Charles Compton. Tonight's guests are GOP candidates George Phillips and Steve Wells. Fellow Republican Claudia Tenney was invited to participate, but Tenney is in Albany and is unable to attend. We hope to stage another debate in the fall, just before the general election. Okay, let's go ahead and switch back to Mr. Phillips and let's talk other economic initiatives. Mr. Phillips, what should we do to improve the economy in the Southern Tier?
I've led on an upstate jobs plan. My upstate jobs plan would be modeled after something that Jack Kemp called for. They were enterprise zones in cities. And he said, if freedom and free markets are going to work anywhere, they're going to work everywhere. I've said, why limit these just to cities? Let's allow the federal government to set up empowerment regions in areas that are struggling, like our own here in upstate New York. In the empowerment region, we would have tax and regulatory relief on the federal level that the state would have to match. That's critical for our area here. I'm running for federal office for United States Congress. So many people have said, George, that's great, but our problems are on the state level. The state keeps driving jobs out of this area. We've gone from 41 members of Congress down to 27 since the 1970s because of population losses. Our job growth since the early 1990s in New York State is only 10%, and that includes growth in Wall Street. The national average is 24%. The job growth in Texas is 67% during that time. So we need to get the economy going here. This is a plan I believe I could sell in Congress. Senator Paul in Kentucky is running on a similar plan, and we need to lift up the entrepreneurial spirit. Nothing you do as a business owner to grow or expand the economy should be penalized under the tax code. My plan would also look at trying to bring in private sector investment to Binghamton University, right down the road here, to the new high-tech incubator that is going in downtown Binghamton. We would do that by saying, if you invest in an empowerment region, you will not be taxed on capital gains you make from that. This is absolutely critical. We have to embrace the good work that Binghamton University is doing. We have to try to keep more of these fine young men and women that we're training at Binghamton University here in New York State and at Broome Community College, where I teach, and we need to get this economy going again. My upstate jobs plan is critical to this.
Mr. Wells, your plan.
Yes, well, look, I can tell you firsthand, as someone who does business here in the Southern Tier and has created over 1,000 jobs, I can tell you firsthand what needs to be done, and it's pretty simple. What we don't need is more politicians coming up with more plans, because the plans don't work. The bottom line is, what we need to do is to get government overregulation out of the way and a tax structure that makes us competitive. Until we do those two things, jobs will continue to leave New York State, they will continue to leave the Southern Tier, and you can mark my words on it, there's no way to turn it around until we do those two major things. And now, what's happening there is what's happening across the United States. So I'll tell you, as a business person who's created over 1,000 jobs right here, we've got to do those two things. Forget all the fancy plans that the government comes up with. If we don't do those two things, you're going to continue to have significant job erosion. I hate to break the news to everybody. You're going to see more of what we've had the last 30 years. That's the unfortunate truth of the matter.
So what federal regulation really bugs you as a business owner, Mr. Wells?
Yeah, well, look, I'll tell you the story.
Keep it to one or two.
Right. Well, I mean, there is no end to them. And as, yeah, I've been traveling around this district, I hear from people in all kinds of industries about governmental overregulation that's costing them money in every single industry. And the one that breaks my heart the worst is our agricultural community, because this is such an important part of our economy, and it's an issue of national security. So I gave you the example of the EPA overregulating Judy Whitaker's farm. I mean, here's a 100-year-old dairy farm. Our dairy farmers are on the verge of going out of business. And if you look, 20% now of the nation's food supply comes in from out of the country. We are losing our upstate farms, and there's no reason for it. It's overregulation, for example, with the EPA and the Waters of the USA, act that they're where they are coming in and saying, you know, costing her $650,000. And I've heard this not just from Judy, I've heard this from farmer after farmer. The overregulation by the EPA is killing them. So that's the one that breaks my heart the worst, because it strikes home. We need a safe and domestic food supply. And personally, if you want another one, I can go on all day. I'll tell you about Obamacare.
Depends on time.
I'll tell you about Obamacare. Now, this is another example and a reason why that differentiates me from everyone else that's running for Congress. I can tell you firsthand about the issues with Obamacare and how it's infected my company. I had to face 200 employees and tell them why their plan didn't no longer qualify after the president told them they could keep their doctors, after he told them they could keep their plan. Well, it wasn't true. It wasn't true then, and now I had to tell 200 people that they were going to lose their plan. So I can give you example after example.
Mr. Phillips, maybe you have some examples.
I wanted to come back to the importance and specifics of my plan from a personal story. I'll never forget the day when my brother lost his job and left at the airport, and my parents were there at the airport. We saw him getting on the plane with my nephews, and they were crying. We've all had those moments here in the Southern Tier. When we went down to visit him in North Carolina, half the people were from upstate New York. There's something wrong with our state here. My plan will work because it puts pressure on the state. The plan that Ronald Reagan put forth, which was actually Kemp Roth, was ridiculed by some as voodoo economics. It's supply-side economics. It's Ronald Reagan. That's what our plan is based on. It'll get our economy going here. It'll show that we can bring upstate New York back, and our plan will spread to the rest of the country and make America strong again. I do want to be very clear that our plan is in stark contrast to the absolute disaster of Governor Cuomo's plan, Start Up New York. It was tax relief only for new startups coming in from other states, and it was only going through a stiff regulatory process around universities. If you look at his plan, very few jobs actually came in. Tens of millions of dollars were spent on advertising. We need to do something for the business owners that are here, that have fought, that have stayed, that continue to create jobs. They're more likely to grow more jobs than a new startup coming in. So our plan is in stark contrast to what Cuomo has given us here and the disaster of that. And I think we do need specifics. My plan is based on the work of President Reagan and of Jack Kemp, of what's worked before. We need something clear. We need to fight for it. I could build a coalition together behind this plan. I plan on being a leader from day one in the Congress, and we are going to get this done. I'm going to talk with members from other regions that are struggling. And if you look, if we could get America going again, we'll see this spread throughout the world. The countries that are opening up markets are doing better. The countries that are embracing Bernie Sanders, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton-style socialism in Europe are failing, and they're going bankrupt. And we can't let it happen here. We've got to stay, and we've got to fight.
Mr. Phillips, should Congress mandate a living wage?
Well, I think you're referring to the minimum wage.
And no, I'm referring to a living wage, which is a lot higher.
Okay. Yeah. Generally speaking, the minimum wage debate has come in here, and we're talking about living wages. I don't believe in more government regulations here. Too many government regulations have hurt the poor. I alluded to the fact that we're on the 50th anniversary of the failed war on poverty. We have more people trapped in poverty. There's dignity in work. I've come up with a plan that says, let's strike welfare from the U.S. code and replace it with work empowerment. If you're out of work for a period of time, you can get benefits, but after a very short period of time, you have to do some work to get benefits. We need drug testing as well for those who are on welfare. Look in our community here. I have friends that are teaching, specifically in the Binghamton and Johnson City and Union Endicott districts. One friend said in her second grade class, the year starts off with 25 students, but quite quickly it goes down to 16, 17. We have families, unfortunately, coming from New York City for a better life. The better life is not job opportunities, it's shopping around benefits and trying to be here and abusing the system. There is dignity in work. We need to get America working again. Government regulation makes things worse, like the minimum wage. The minimum wage increases by Governor Cuomo are hurting poor people. More jobs are going to be lost. More companies are going to leave New York State. We need to lift up this economy. We need to lift up entrepreneurs and small business owners and not have these forced price controls. I have students in this room, and many of my students work part-time jobs. They don't need $15 an hour in these part-time jobs. When they take a job like that, that means another student will lose their job. That means someone else who could graduate from minimum wage up into a mid or level management position and make a better wage is going to lose that opportunity. And so too much big government is crushing this economy. New York State is going backward. We have to stand. We have to fight. My plan takes on Albany as well.
Mr. Wells, same question. Should government mandate a living wage?
Well, I can tell you as a business person who's not a politician, who's never run for any office, but who's created over 1,000 jobs, that the issue with our 30-plus years of job erosion here in New York State and in the southern tier, where it's been most acute, is because we are not competitive. And so when you ask a question like that, you have to ask yourself, does a policy like that, is it going to make us more competitive or less competitive? And I think the answer is quite obvious. If you enact additional regulations like that, all you're going to do is make us less competitive. That's the bottom line. If you want to lose more jobs, then that would be a great way to go. My plan that I've announced is to freeze regulations in the next Congress. That's what the Congress should do, is stop regulating right now. Step back and look at the regulations that we've passed, that the executive branch has taken over the last 8-plus years, and let's look at those regulations and analyze. Is the benefit outweighing the cost? That's what we need to be doing right now in the Congress, not going off and passing more regulations.
A lot of businesses have been impacted by this new U.S. Labor Department ruling. This is from a viewer. It'll go into effect this December. It provides for overtime pay for workers who in the past were ineligible or exempt for overtime pay. Do you support this rule? Would you try to have it reversed? And I'll go ahead and stay with Mr. Wells on that question.
I'm sorry, somebody was talking here. I didn't.
Oh, the question. Okay, I'll repeat it.
Please.
Then, let me find my place again. A new U.S. Labor Department ruling that will go into effect this December provides for overtime payment to workers who in the past were ineligible and exempt. Do you support this rule? And I also urge the audience to please stay quiet so the candidates are able to hear me. It's rarely a problem, but people being able to hear me, but I guess it can happen.
Thank you very much. So look, my answer to that question is the same as it was to the question before. It's pretty simple. You can analyze every one of these questions about whether or not it makes us more competitive or less competitive. And I think the answer, once again, is pretty obvious. It doesn't make us more competitive. And if we're not going to be more competitive, we're going to continue to lose jobs here in Broome County, Tioga County, the Southern Tier, New York State, and the United States.
Okay, same question to you, Mr. Phillips. Should we reverse this U.S. Labor Department rule that goes into effect in December that makes more people eligible for overtime pay?
Yes, we should. And I want to say I support Steve's effort to stop new regulations from coming in place, but we have to look at existing ones. Part of my upstate jobs plan would call for the following. We need to go through every one of the 178,000 regulations that are on the books that are killing jobs and go through them and say, are they helping the economy? Are they hurting the economy? Are they absolutely necessary? And we need to scrap them. Another thing that's hurting the economy is out of control spending. We're at a $19 trillion national debt. All of that government spending is great for Washington, Maryland, and Virginia suburbs there. Those areas are doing well. Taking our taxpayer money, our hard-earned taxpayer money, away from upstate New York and giving it to government bureaucrats and lobbyists in Washington. I want to take another page from President Reagan's playbook. He had something called the Grace Commission. Business leaders came in and scoured the government for waste and inefficiencies. They actually found that one-third of federal spending was wasteful and inefficient. It could be cut back, and Americans could still get the same benefits they deserved. Unfortunately, it was never enacted upon by the Congress. We need a Grace Commission 2.0, business leaders coming in with members of Congress, talking to their constituents about family plans. How have you saved in your family on waste? How have business leaders, small business leaders in this community, saved on waste? And we can cut billions of dollars of waste with a Reagan-style Grace Commission plan. And finally, when we talk about government waste, at the heart of it, something no one is talking about almost, is the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve is way too into this economy. They kept interest rates too low for too long, causing the crash. Then they bailed out the big banks when Main Street was left to suffer here. And we continue to suffer 8 years later with these poor policies of the Obama administration of high taxes, Obamacare regulations, but also poor Fed policies. $3.5 trillion in a bond buying spree by the Fed, giving easy money to the federal government for out-of-control spending and giving money to the big banks, they continue to prosper while Main Street and the average American continue to struggle. We need stable money, and we need to rein in the Fed.
We only have a couple minutes left before we go to closing statements, so I ask you to limit your answer to this next question to just 1 minute, please. And I'll stay with you, Mr. Phillips. What do you consider the Southern Tier's most pressing issue, and what actions would you take to fix it?
Well, we've discussed it here with jobs and the economy, and we continue to shed jobs here. I have my students here, and I've been teaching long enough now that every year I hear stories of students who did great in the community here. Some of them have gone to Broome Community College and Binghamton University, and then they're leaving. And as I said before, we all have family and friends we wish could be here, but are not because of the economic situation. And we need to do something, and we need to do something now, and it's urgent. Think about our community here. My first job besides being a paper boy was at the old IBM plants. Almost every one of us in this community is tied to those IBM plants. My dad sitting here in the audience, he put over 25 years in at those plants. Think about when the retired IBMers start to pass off in this community. We're going to be even worse shape than we are right now. This is an urgent situation. We need a bold plan for America to get things going again. We need to embrace a Reagan-style agenda to get upstate New York
going. I'm sorry, I have to cut you off in order to leave a minute for Mr. Wells. Mr. Wells, your answer to that question.
Thank you. There's no question the issue is economic security, and I can't think of a customer. I have hundreds of customers here in Broome County, and I can't think of one off the top of my head that has more jobs now than they have when I started our business down here two decades ago, 20 years ago. You name them, IBM, I had Lockheed Martin that became British Aerospace, Universal Instruments. I can go on and on and on. And big businesses, small businesses, there's been an utter erosion. And the reason why, again, is because we're not competitive. That's why they're leaving. And if we don't get competitive, they will continue to leave.
Okay, time for closing statements. Mr. Wells, you get to go first.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you all coming here this evening and the League of Women Voters hosting this evening, having me here. Look, the reason that I'm running for Congress as a business person who's never run for office before is because what we need to do is get our country back on track. We are off track. Our economic security and our national security are going in the wrong direction. The bottom line is I've got the experience, having started a business with nothing and creating over 1,000 jobs. I've got the business experience. I don't need to hear from other people that don't know what they're doing. Business people hold a plan. I mean, George has got some good ideas, but I know what to do on day one as a business person. What we need to do to become competitive, and this is what's got to happen. If we don't, we're gonna continue to lose jobs here in upstate New York.
Mr. Phillips, closing statement.
We've been through a lot in this community the last few years together. We've been through job losses. We've been through a few very difficult floods. I was honored to have support of so many of you when I ran in that race in 2010. And I'm asking for your support again. I've led on bold ideas that could get our community going again in our country. I've led on a bold, clear upstate jobs plan. I've led with a plan to try to defeat heroin at its source so it stops killing people in our community. I've led with a dynamic market of choice on healthcare to improve our healthcare system, so there's more choices for all Americans. I've talked about a Ronald Reagan-style Grace Commission to save taxpayers billions of dollars. I've talked about reining in the Fed and getting back to stable money. I've talked about giving welfare an end and turning it into a work empowerment program because we know there's dignity in work. I've talked about a plan to defeat ISIS. I've led. We need a bold plan for America. I want to be a bold leader for this area in the United States Congress. I'm asking for your vote again on June the 28th, and I'm asking you to encourage friends and family to get out and vote and encourage them to vote for me as well.
We're out of time. My thanks to our candidates, GOP contenders George Phillips and Steve Wells. Fellow Republican Claudia Tenney couldn't make it tonight and was unable to attend because of business in Albany. We also want to thank our partners, the League of Women Voters of Broome and Tioga Counties, for their help. Again, you can get more information on these candidates by going to the WSKG News website. Again, thanks for joining us. I'm Charles Compton for WSKG News.
Great job.
This is our best one, right?
Thank you.
This is our best one.